To be upfront with you right from the start, this sermon is about money and giving. There, I said it. And I'm saying it to you just because I want you to know that there is no particular agenda or strategy or crisis or something that is causing me to talk about this. If there were a strategy behind it, today, quite frankly, would be a lousy Sunday to try to talk about it, right? I mean, it's a long weekend. It's Canada Day. A lot of people aren't here. Again, thank you for being here, right? But the reason we're talking about this today is simply because the lectionary had us read from 2 Corinthians chapter 8 this morning. And 2 Corinthians chapter 8 is Paul's words to the Corinthians about money and about giving. And so it's important for us to talk about that and discuss it because it is part of our life. And today happens to be the day that you're here and you get to hear this sermon. But I don't want you to feel that somehow this is a heavy, pressure-filled thing at all. Let's just explore what it is that this passage might say to us. Now, to understand the passage, we first of all have to put it in the context again of what's going on. Last week, we talked about all of Paul's dealings with the city in Corinth, how he went on missionary journeys, spent a year and a half in Corinth planting the church there, and then left there, wrote them a bunch of letters, went off and traveled elsewhere, wanted to come back, but then there was crisis, and a lot of people were hating Paul, and there were issues going on, and one thing after another. But finally, as Paul makes his way down from northern Greece, Macedonia, to come towards Corinth, he learns that the dust had settled and things had calmed down and it was going to be a pretty happy ending after all. Well, in the middle of all of that, there was an issue going on over in Jerusalem. And that is that the church in Jerusalem, the Christians living in Jerusalem, were very much impoverished. And so Paul took it upon himself to go on his missionary journey while he's visiting these churches and establishing new churches to talk about the plight of Christians who are poor in Jerusalem and to encourage the people to take up a collection so that he could gather all this money and bring it back to help them out. That was his intention. And he also communicated that to the church in Corinth. Now, we don't know for sure if he brought it up in that first month and a half while he was planting the church. But when he left Corinth and came over to Asia Minor, to Ephesus, when he wrote 1 Corinthians to them, he did give specific instructions on how to make this happen. And so in 1 Corinthians chapter 16, he says, what you each need to do is every week decide how much money you want to give. And then on the first day of the week, that is on Sunday when you gather for worship, you bring the money and you'll collect it all up. And when I finally get back to you, I'll take that collection and bring it down to Jerusalem. So that was in 1 Corinthians. Well, now here, as he's in Macedonia, about to make his way back to Corinth again, and he'd heard the news that things were good, and he wrote this letter, he decided to help them dust off that initiative again that they had made a year earlier. It seems that it kind of went to the back burner because of all the crisis they were dealing with, and so Paul wanted to bring it up with them again. And to do so, he said right from the start, and you might remember hearing this when Susan read it, he talks about the churches in Macedonia. Now, the Macedonian churches would be places like Philippi and Thessalonica and Berea. And Paul said that they contributed generously to this cause for the poor Christians in Jerusalem. And he said it was remarkable because he said, I wasn't even really expecting that they would be able to give much. I mean, they're dealing with a huge issue. They've got persecution going on. They're having all sorts of challenges outside of them. And yet they gave not only according to their means, but even beyond their means. And they were pleading for the opportunity to do this. And so he was amazed at their generosity. So he challenged the Corinthians and said, you know what? You guys have got things going very, very well for you. You've just come through a challenging thing, sure, but you don't have the pressures that they've had. And with all of your benefits, certainly you would be able to respond in a similar way. You said a year ago you would help out. We're asking you to once again revisit that and to give and to be generous in that giving. And so that's what the nature of his letter was. This is why he brought it up and why he was talking about it. And the expectation is that once Paul got there, he did indeed have a collection from Corinth to bring to the church in Jerusalem. So that's the history. That's the story. That's where 2 Corinthians fits into everything. But once again, a question we always have to ask ourselves is, how can this be instructive to us today at all? I mean, this initiative of Paul's is not still going on. There is not still a collection being taken for Christians in Jerusalem. That ended 2,000 years ago. That initiative is done. So we cannot find any instruction specifically for that need. But I think what we can find in this passage are key principles about giving that is helpful for us to know. Because giving has always been part of Christian practice and Christian worship. Now, I might need to state this as something painfully obvious, but let me just simply throw it out there, right? When it comes to giving, except for a handful of churches in the world that have huge endowment funds that generate interest that allow their operations to continue, the funding for any church, including this one, comes 100% from people giving money to it. That's where it comes from. That's why we collect the offering on a Sunday morning. It's because that is the source of income for any parish, and certainly for this parish here, the Church of the Good Shepherd. And so with that in mind, what is it that Paul has to say in this passage that might help inform us about giving and about stewardship in that way? Well, one of the things Paul does when he's challenging the Corinthians to help out with Jerusalem is he makes a theological appeal to the generosity of God to humanity. He brings up Jesus Christ and he says, remember that Jesus, who being rich, made himself poor so that by his poverty you may become rich. What he's talking about there is the fact that God, in wanting to help the world and serve the world, the second person of the Trinity, Jesus Christ, who lived in the divine glory from ages past, put aside that glory, made himself nothing, taking the very form of a servant, becoming a human being, it says in Colossians 2. And in becoming a human being, in descending from that divine glory to humanity, then we human beings who are able to be connected with Jesus are then elevated into that divine glory. In that way, we become rich. And so Paul's appeal with this whole notion of giving is to point out God's giving to humanity. This is a reflection of God's love for humanity. And remember that when we talk about God's love, we're talking about that love called agape, which is a self-giving, self-sacrificial love. It is an action. It's not a feeling. It's a deliberate course taken for the benefit of others. And so Paul is saying, because God has been generous in that way in giving to us, we in our giving reflect that characteristic and quality of God's love. And as ones who want to mirror the person of Christ, we too ought to be generous in that way. But then he also brings up an important point that is not explicitly stated in this passage, but we can see how it can be undergirded, and that is understanding how we are to give, what approach we're to take. Of course, here he is talking about supporting the poor Christians in Jerusalem, but that would not be done at the expense of the foundation of the church in Corinth itself. This is part of the reason he was amazed at the Macedonian generosity. He said they gave according to their means and even beyond their means. He couldn't stop them from giving. But the implication is always one of balance. One thing Paul is not saying is that the Corinthians should give so that they are impoverished in order to make the poor Christians of Jerusalem rich. He's not saying, I want to place a burden on you for the benefit of others. No, there's meant to be a balance so that those who have much don't have too much, but those who have little don't have too little. The key principle here is it's not about sacrificing the home base, as it were, for the sake of the need that is out there. And this is an important thing to grasp. So let me talk about this a little bit more with a couple of words that you find in the scriptures from time to time. They're often referred to in pairs as tithes and offerings. Tithes refer to the foundation, the building up the home base. It's the money that is given to support the local church, the local parish. And offerings are that which is given elsewhere in outreach or philanthropic efforts or what have you. These two categories of giving. Now, the word tithe comes from the Hebrew Bible, and it means tenth. And so in the Torah, in the law that was given to ancient Israel, it was actually a law. They were required to take one-tenth of their income, one-tenth of their flocks and herds, one-tenth of their produce, and what they would do is bring it to the temple. So bringing it to the temple now makes it an act of worship. It is being given to God in that way. The Israelites were made aware that all that they have comes from God in the first place. And so they're giving 10% of it back to God as an act of worship by bringing it to the temple. But then that which was brought to the temple became the means by which the temple continued in operation as the hub of their worship. And so the Christian church continues in a similar vein, that same principle. However, the idea of the tithe as a mandate, as a law, the giving the one-tenth, is no longer in place. Jesus refers to the tithe from time to time, but when he does so, he's speaking to a Jewish audience who are familiar with the Torah and what's required there. The moment you go outside of Palestine, outside of Israel, the references to giving now no longer refer to a tithe, but instead principles like we've heard in 2 Corinthians 8. The Apostle Paul says to the Corinthians, look, when the desire is there to give, then the amount given is acceptable. Because you are to give according to what one has, not according to what one does not have. And so now the idea is no longer that there is a mandated law that 10% is to be given. No, you consider what you're going to give on the basis of willingly giving is a response of worship to God and a reflection of God's generosity to us. Being aware that we got to take care of the home base and keep the local church strong while also being prepared to support and help others. So how this plays out is a very good thing to see. And it's important that we keep a certain sense of balance in this strategy of giving. All right. One thing that comes up is the question, why is the church in Jerusalem poor? I mean, this is the headquarters of the church. This is where it all started. This is where the day of Pentecost happened. This is where Jesus hung out. Why was it poor? There's a couple of ideas that have emerged. One of them is that there was a famine in the region. And yes, there was. It's referred to in the book of Acts. And in 49 CE, or 49 AD, if you will, there was indeed a famine in the area. And so it could very well be that because of the famine, the church in Jerusalem was struggling. However, Paul is taking this collection in the mid-50s. So, you know, if it's 53, 54, 55 AD, and he's still taking a collection for a famine, that must have been a pretty significant famine, if that's the cause for the poverty. But there's another idea as to why the church might be impoverished. And this has to do with what we read in Acts chapter 2 and Acts chapter 4. When we read those chapters, what we learn about is how the church began to function when it was first established. The day of Pentecost happened, 3,000 people decide to become followers of Jesus, and in the days and weeks and months later, God continues to add to their number those who were becoming Christians. And it tells us that they had everything in common, they shared among themselves so that nobody had need. But then a couple of remarkable instances are also highlighted where some people would sell property they had and then take the proceeds from that sale and give it to the apostles to distribute to those who had need. So a wonderful picture of generosity, right? But there's a thought that perhaps that was over generous. And here's what I mean by that. We have to keep in mind that the early church, when it was formed and in the earliest days of the church, everybody was expecting that Jesus is going to come back next Thursday. Right? Like any day now, Jesus is coming back. And so with that thought in mind, if you're now a new Christian and you've got wealth and property and stuff, and you see your fellow brothers and sisters, many of whom are struggling, maybe can't even make ends meet, can't even buy the groceries, you might very well think, well, you know what? I've got this property over here. And Jesus is coming back any day now. I'm not going to need this. So let me just go ahead and sell this thing. We'll go ahead and take the money, give it to the apostles, we'll share it with everybody. Jesus is going to come back any day now, and everything will be great. But of course, Jesus didn't come back right away. And we're still waiting for him to come back. And so what the suggestion is that perhaps the Jerusalem church learned the hard way the difficulty of liquidating capital to turn it into income. Because the moment you have an asset and you sell it for cash, the cash gets spent, and now you're all back to square one. The rich Christians who had the property and invested it, though it was certainly helpful in the short term, now no longer have that income, and now they're just as poor as everybody else. Now, we don't know for sure if that's what happened in Jerusalem, but it is a scholarly thought that perhaps that's what happened, and we could see why it would. But whether that is what happened or not in Jerusalem, it is an important principle for us to consider when we talk about our giving, that it is important for us to be responsible. You see, here's the thing. I love it that this parish has a half a dozen outreach initiatives that we intentionally pursue. And we highlight them, and Betty and Sandy do a great job of highlighting them, and Jan talks about our Primates World Relief and Development Fund, and being able to give money and help others is important. It's part of our mandate, it's part of our mission, and it's vital, and I am so glad for that. But in our outreach giving, we also have to keep in mind that the home base has to be solid and secure. Because if the home base is shaky, then it will directly affect our ability for outreach ministry. Let me give you an example. And let me stress that this example is not criticism. It is simply an objective observation. All right? One of our outreach initiatives is to support the St. Edmund's Anglican Church Food Bank in Bowness. And so the first Sunday of every month, except in the summer, we have Protein Sunday, and we collect up protein items like peanut butter and stuff like that that we can donate to the St. Edmund's Food Bank. That ministry has been going for decades. It makes a big difference. It's a wonderful thing to be able to contribute to, and we're glad for it. However, it used to be a food and clothing bank. Except that in this past year, St. Edmund's had to tell everybody that they've had to reluctantly discontinue the clothing bank part of their ministry because they do not have the money or the people to continue doing it. You see, what has happened is the home base of St. Edmund's has eroded over time, and without the solid foundation that St. Edmund's once was, their effective and helpful outreach is now also suffering and being affected. It's being diminished. Again, I'm not being critical of St. Edmund's. I'm just simply saying this is what's happened. And so for us, as we endeavor to see our outreach ministry successful and expanded upon, it's important for us to keep in mind that we also have to make sure that we take care of home base, that we ensure that we're strong and solid financially. So what does that mean in light of these principles, of all that we've talked about? That giving is an act of worship. Giving is a reflection of God's generosity towards us, that the giving is not to be to our detriment, making us poor that someone else could suddenly become wealthy, but to help share and spread the load and that kind of thing, and recognizing the importance of the home base being solid so that we can be in a place to continue to give to others. How do we work this out? Well, this is where it comes back to the tithes and offerings thing. Now again, the tithe piece is no longer an essential 10% focus. But let me just say something about the 10% piece. If you were to talk to a financial planner today about how to get your personal finances in order to get towards financial independence, they will recommend that the first thing you do is you pay yourself first. You take 10% of your income and you invest it. You put it into, well, savings accounts aren't very helpful nowadays, but you put it in RRSP or whatever. You invest 10%. But then many of them will also say that if you want to be solid financially, you need to now give 10% of your income away. Whether we're giving to a political party or to a philanthropic organization or to a church or other charity or whatever, pay yourself first 10%, give away 10%, and then learn to live off the 80%. And so it's an interesting principle. Even though for us as Christians, that 10% number is no longer a law from God, it's interesting that that number still crops up. Well, as we consider our giving, there are a number of ways to give here at the Good Shepherd, of course. You can put cash in the plate when it comes by. You can sign up for offering envelopes, which allow you to do regular donations that way. The diocese also has a pre-authorized auto debit thing where on the 16th of the month, a certain amount of money comes out of your account that you've pre-authorized. And so there's a number of ways to commit to supporting the local parish. And I'd been debating whether to share this or not, but in talking about it with the parish council, they were thinking that it might very well be helpful to share it. So the reason I want to share is simply because, you know, it's easy for somebody to stand up and talk about a thing, but you might have a hard time wondering if the guy doing the talking is actually doing the thing. Does he practice what he preaches? And so just as a point of reference and encouragement or whatever, in our household, we give 10% of my gross income and 5% of Wanda's gross income to the parish. That's the commitment we've done. That's the kind of pattern we followed for many, many years, and it's now been extended here to Good Shepherd. Now, in saying that, if you give less, I am not trying to say, okay, come on, pony up. Okay, I'm not saying that. If you're someone who gives more, I am certainly not saying you can kind of, you know, that's not what I'm trying to say, right? But just simply saying that I am someone who's practicing what he's preaching and recognizing the value of that strong home base. Because we want to be people who are able to continue for decades to come. It's our 60th anniversary this year. We want to be able to see another 60 years in the history of this parish, continuing to be able to reach out and support others around us. And we can only do that if we're really solid. The church needs to be strong. Let me close simply with a document that was produced a few years ago before I came that highlight our key ministry priorities. This is something the congregation came up with here in the parish. The third key ministry priority for the Good Shepherd is to inspire service. And here's what it says. As faithful stewards of God's grace, we commit to serve one another joyfully and humbly, sharing the gifts we have been blessed with, including our time, money, possessions, and abilities. Our priority is to increasingly serve the needs of our parish, the world, and of all creation as good neighbors and wise as respectful stewards of God's earth. Let's fulfill that key ministry priority. Ensure that we continue to do our part in giving and supporting one another as a parish for the sake of the kingdom of God. Amen.